All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor Dave Bowser.
How are you, Patrick?
And Noah Lisa McCarter.
Nah. Onward we go.
Out sick. So.
Yep. May she be well.
May she be well. Yes. How was your Easter?
It's good. Yours?
Yeah. Good, good, good. This is coming out now a week after Easter, but recording
my
right after
Easter. My second Sunday
after
Easter was also excellent. And we're still in the Easter season, so you can ask me how was my Easter for another 6 Sundays. It's great.
We're in Easter till Pentecost?
Correct.
And then it's just like...
Ordinary time. it's literally called ordinary time.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, happy Easter season to
us all. Easter season, indeed. Yes. This is the time when Jesus was walking and talking with the disciples as a resurrected Jesus before he ascended on ascension.
Yeah, okay. I'm very familiar with that part of the Bible. It's kind of short.
It's very brief.
Have you ever used a compass before?
Yeah, I've used a compass.
For what?
Well, that depends. Which kind of compass are we talking about? Are we talking the directional compass or the math compass? Because I've used them for different things.
Directional.
I have used it to find my way around compasses, maps, and stuff. I have never like been in the woods and like used a compass to navigate my way back, but I have used a compass.
Like for orienteering?
Yeah, I've never done an orienteering. I've never done that.
Okay. But when I worked at camp, we did teach orienteering for like schools that would come in.
Yeah, sure.
And environmental an education. Educational component. Yeah. I never taught it. It looks so boring. I led team building. That was my... Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, I have held a compass in my hand. I've pointed it and been like, oh yeah, look, that's that way. And
yes. Yeah.
And like now the compass is in your car, right? So I can like tell my kids, like, look, this is the direction.
Even on your phone. Your phone comes with a compass.
It does. Yeah.
I think it's one of those apps you can't delete.
The phone also comes with a map, which is way more helpful than the compass, if I'm being honest.
Correct. I mean, I know if I was like lost in the woods, you know, dropped off, blindfolded, I could identify north, east, west, south.
Yeah.
I could definitely do that.
Yeah.
Now, what you do with that information without any other, like, is nothing, you know, like, but I guess you could be like, I'm walking in one direction until I find something.
Yeah. And I just make sure I keep going in that direction.
Yeah. And I could do that. Yes. Yeah. Now, again, you could be walking in the wrong direction. But
if you're like a super secret spy, then you know, okay, they flew me south for 30 miles and then they pushed me out of the plane and then I flew at this rate and the wind is going this direction. So I would have...
That's how I know it. Yeah. But it's never been put to the test, but I'm confident that I could do that.
Right,
anyway.
I'm going to go push you out of a plane. We're going to see what happens.
I don't think the direction of north is my most pressing concern as I'm falling. Anyway. Maybe this is the compass for you.
Okay.
Two guys made a compass that always points to the Times Square's Olive Garden.
This is like the Pirates of the Caribbean compass. Everybody's going to think it's broken, but they're like, no, it's pointing to our heart's desire. The Times Square Olive Garden.
Buy a compass that points to the Times Square Olive Garden.
That's a very, very specific and unique thing for it to be pointing to. Like, I mean, I could see like a pilgrim or something like that being like, I need a compass that points to Mecca or I need a compass that points to like a place of prayer. Like that could be useful.
Mecca would make sense because you got to face it. And so if you're around the world, you don't know what's the closest direction.
Are you supposed to just go places or are you just always supposed to face like east towards Mecca?
Well, if you're a mile outside of Mecca, you know, I don't think you face all the way around. That doesn't make any sense.
I don't know what the rules are.
What if you're in the outskirts, you know, like the suburbs of Mecca, the woodlands of Mecca?
I don't know what the rules are. I'm just saying, pointing towards Mecca would be more helpful to me than pointing towards the...
What if you're north of Mecca? You face east? That doesn't make... You face south.
I don't know. I don't know the rules of Mecca.
We in America face east because it's closest.
I don't do it at all because I am not a member of that faith.
That's fair. But I could not figure out what east is.
I could. I could go east.
Especially this, if you know where the Olive Garden is.
Yeah.
Based on Houston.
I can pray to the Olive Garden.
I could probably, figure it out. Do you like Olive Garden?
I know the general direction of Olive Garden in Times Square from here. It's northeast. I can get that.
Yeah. I could. Yeah. I might need a few minutes.
Yeah. Do I like Olive Garden? Yeah, Olive Garden's fine. I mean, as far as like chain restaurants go, it's above Applebee's.
Okay.
Do you disagree with the assessment that it's above Applebee's?
I think it's kind of in the same vein.
I'm saying like...
out of
I'm putting them in the same ranking, and then like Olive Garden would be like, if I had to choose between Olive Garden and Applebee's, I would choose Olive Garden.
Okay.
Primarily unlimited breadsticks.
Sure. Applebee's does not have breadsticks.
Yeah. I'm not saying like the food is like grossly better than Applebee's, but yeah, I would say if I'm ranking these options, I would take it above that.
Yeah. Out of those things, I mean, I think Chili's is obviously the best.
It's fair. Yeah. I haven't been to Chili's for a long time.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, you know, reality, you should not go to any of them.
You just said it was the best.
I think it is the best at that, but I don't think it is necessarily good.
All right, fair enough. Yeah.
All right.
So why did they develop a compass to point towards the Olive Garden in Times Square?
They were tired of guessing which way the Times Square Olive Garden was and wanted a more analog experience than checking a phone.
Couldn't they just like say, where's Times Square? Like
2,000 people have already joined the waitlist to purchase this compass.
What? There are 2,000 people who think this is a worthy investment of their time.
I do think it's kind of funny. One, that there's an Olive Garden on Times Square.
I'm not surprised.
It's hilarious in and of itself that you go to New York, you know, a cultural mecca of, speaking of mecca, of food and different experiences. And you're like, I'm going to Olive Garden.
Yeah. That's like when Michael Scott shows up to his favorite Italian pizza place and goes to Sparrow.
Yes,
which I think is also on Times Square, if I remember correctly.
I think they're scattered about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, one, that there's an Olive Garden there is pretty funny.
Yeah.
And then, two, that we want a compass that points to it.
So, what is the achievement that allows the compass to always point to Olive Garden?
Okay.
So how does that work? Because Olive Garden does not, as far as I know, have a magnetic pole that would steer the compass, as my understanding of compi work.
I can tell you how it does.
Is it compi? Compasses?
This is what it uses.
Okay.
Arduino Nano microcontroller.
What now?
A GPS unit.
Okay.
A gyro sensor. Those are not Olive Garden.
I thought you were looking for an analog.
And a stepper motor to constantly direct the needle towards the Times Square Olive Garden's fixed coordinates.
This is not analog. This is a digital thing that's just not on your phone.
I don't know what to tell you, man.
As soon as you're using GPS locator, you're not using anything analog anymore. So.
I do hear that the Times Square Olive Garden is kind of a happening place.
Yeah. Who do you hear this from?
For the New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve? Olive Garden, New Year's Eve is the place to be?
Well, because people go to Times Square for New Year's Eve.
Right.
But if you're there, you're like trapped and you can't do anything or go anywhere. You're just like in a sea of people for hours at a time. But you're Olive Garden right there and you have a bathroom, you have food, you have wine, all those things.
So you go to the Olive Garden and you're like getting the Times Square experience without having to be in the Times Square.
Correct.
How long do you have to get to the Olive Garden?
I think pretty early.
So you're like going to Olive Garden.
I think you're buying a package.
Oh, okay.
It's not like just showing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you buy the Olive Garden package.
I mean, you could show up because when you're there, it's your family.
Right.
So like...
Is that Olive Garden? Is that theirs?
That's their thing. Okay. And I mean, is my family going to kick me out? Come on. Come
Some
on,
of Olive my Garden. Family might.
That's fair.
Also, would return the favor for some of my family. So.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay.
Oh, do you want this compass?
I
think it's beautifully stupid. You know, I think like it's kind of funny.
It is definitely stupid. I will agree with that wholeheartedly. I'm interested in the Olive Garden New Year's Eve package. That's interesting to me.
Okay. You want me to look it up?
No, not right now. But I would be more willing to do something like that than to stand on the streets of New York for hours on end with no bathroom.
There's a 0% chance I would go to the Times Square New Year's Eve party.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
That's a non-starter.
Yeah.
Once upon
a time, I thought like, oh yeah, someday I want to do that. And then
if my wife said that was her greatest dream, I'd be like, I think that sounds great for you. I'm going to be at Olive Garden.
With a bathroom.
Yeah, eating breadsticks. Eating a salad that's very, very cold for some reason.
Yeah, because they keep it refrigerated all day long.
Getting the little cheese wheel. You know, they spin the cheese on.
I do like the unlimited Parmesan, yeah. Just keep it going. I haven't said stop yet. Don't you stop cranking.
You maybe can get the unlimited pasta bowl, too.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. All right. There you go. That's the... compass that always points to the Times Square Olive Garden.
Do you have
a compass? You know, it's supposed you'd want to have a compass.
Well, that's what I was about to ask you. It's like, if you could have your compass point anywhere, where would you always want to know it's pointing?
That is a good question.
You could get like a, you know, in a Harry Potter, Molly Weasley has the clock where like she knows where all of her people are at all times.
Sure.
So you could like have locators on all your children and then a compass that points to all your different children wherever
you,
they are.
I think you have that already with like an Apple tag, an AirTag.
I think you already know how to find Olive Garden too. I'm not saying we don't have this technology. I'm saying you can have a compass that does that.
You know, in my home, maybe like the remote to the TV, that seems to disappear quite often. Okay. So,
all right. Yeah.
So there you go.
Is there a restaurant that you would want to always like, and not even just like a specific location, but like, I always want to know what the closest blank is. Like, which direction is the closest blank? That could be interesting.
Clean bathroom.
Okay, but well, that's not a restaurant, but you could have like the closest Buc-ee's. You could have a Buc-ee's compass that always points to the closest Buc-ee's.
Yeah, that's true. They do have clean restrooms.
Yeah.
But I'm not going driving 40 miles to go to their bathroom.
Hey.
If I need a bathroom, I need it now. Yeah. I could probably just go home instead of going to Buc-ee's. You know, where I'm at right now, home is closer.
Fair enough.
Yeah. That's a good question. What? I mean, a Chick-fil-A obviously seems pretty, you know, good.
I think you're like never far enough away from a Chick-fil-A for that, it to like
I
know.
Need a compass.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, there just, you go. Just walk in one direction for 10 minutes and you're going to find a Chick-fil-A.
You got to know north, south, east, west so you don't walk in a circle.
Sure.
All right. This is from Christianity Today.
Okay.
This is an article by Tim Keller.
Oh.
But it was written several years ago because
he's dead. He's died. Yeah.
He's no longer with us. Yes.
Okay. He is with Jesus.
Yeah. They've re-put out this article.
Okay.
So.
A repost,
yeah.
A throwback.
Hope for a better world starts with the resurrection.
Very post-Easter appropriate story.
I'm pro-hope. I'm
pro-resurrection.
Pro-better world, pro-resurrection. And I'm pro-Tim Keller.
I'm indifferent on better world. That's it.
Sure. Pros all around. Yeah. So, yeah, these days, you know, better worlds, look.
Same, low bar.
Same world. I would love the same. If the world was the exact same today as it was yesterday, I'd be like, this is pretty good.
It's a step in the right direction.
Nothing has gone worse.
That's right. We gotta have reasonable expectations.
Yeah. All right. Four reasons Christianity offers unparalleled confidence that history is headed somewhere good.
Oh, this is the number four. This is not. Sorry, it sounded like you were saying for reasons Christianity has. No,
yes, yes, the number four. Yes,
four different reasons. Got it. I misheard you. I'm sorry.
All right. I think that this. I do like or appreciate this idea of this article coming out now, even in Tim Keller's passing.
Yeah.
Because that the world is heading somewhere good.
Yeah.
I think has been thrown somewhat in question.
That
I think right now we're having the first generation that is like less successful than the generation before.
In a long time, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Like less financial successful. Yeah. In a long time in America. Less career opportunities, you know, you're buying a home later and it's smaller and it's more expensive than the home you grew up in, kind of a thing. Like, and so like the markers of like the world is getting better from like my kids have more opportunities, now they have less, is sometimes difficult because for, you know, at least a while in America, every generation had it better than the generation before.
Yeah, for sure.
And now we're reaching a place where it's like, my kids might not have the same opportunities that I had, the same freedom, you know, economically or politically or socially that I had. You know, they might have to fight battles that we already fought, you know, like, and victories for equality and justice that have already been fought and won, and now they have to refight them. So I do think the idea of like, the resurrection giving us hope that history is heading somewhere good is important right now.
Yeah. Well, I think even when we go back to Martin Luther King, right? The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice.
Yeah.
When that arc is so slow in its slope, I think there have been points where it feels like it's really drastically shifting towards justice at a rapid pace. And then there are points like this where it feels like, is it?
Yeah.
But I think that this points us to that same point of like, it is still going there.
Yeah.
It's harder to see at some points.
And this is not just like, you know, we're a more progressive church. It's not just like the progressives are thinking that. I mean, Donald Trump's slogan is "Make America Great Again." Implication is it's no longer great. I mean, like that's the reality. Is like things have shifted and gotten worse, and now we need to fight to make them better. So this is not a one side of America thinks this.
Right,
both sides think this. They probably point to different things.
Right,
you know, like
and different solutions.
And different solutions or different things. But like the idea of like the world is not as good as it used to be.
Yeah, is
probably kind of prevalent for all of us.
And certainly for Tim Keller, like this is bigger than an American issue, right? It's not it's not that the resurrection gives hope for a better America.
Yeah.
It's the resurrection gives hope for a better world, right?
Correct. And that's, Yeah, and he does kind of highlight that since Americans have had that trajectory of prosperity and advancement, it's been easy for Americans to see the world getting better and better and better, but that's not the same across the world or culture, you know, universally. Many cultures, and he highlights, see history as cyclical, a slow decline from a golden age. I mean, that's probably the idea of like make America great again is like there was a golden age of America and now we're declining away from it.
Right.
You know, and that, you know, the idea, and he says, the idea that history is moving in the direction of continual progress and the improvement of the human condition does not exist for many cultures. Maybe even including the Roman culture that the Bible was written.
You know,
they're a classic golden age society, and then things got worse, and then they get golden age again, and then things get worse. So, all right, so how does the resurrection bring about hope? Let's get through his four things.
Okay.
Christian hope is reasonable.
Okay. I'm gonna need some more information here. What do we mean by Christian hope is reasonable? Or maybe what do we mean when we think it's not reasonable?
All right. So he is saying, and this, you know, and this is Tim Keller here, formidable historical evidence that the resurrection of Christ actually happened. This one I'm probably going to say I'm not quite sure I'm aligned with Timmy on this one.
Timmy's your son.
Yeah.
This is not Timmy.
He can be Timmy.
I don't like it.
Timothy?
Timothy Keller? Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah. TK.
He goes by Tim. Yeah. TK?
Yeah, TK.
Yeah.
If we're going nicknames, I'm going TK.
Kells?
Yeah.
Can we do that?
Kelster.
Yeah. The Kelster? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if there is formidable historical evidence. I don't think it is like bereft. Like it's like there's nothing.
Sure.
You know, like I think there's definitely the early church believed this. And within like historical dating, within 10 to 15 years, whenever 1 Corinthians comes out, we have writings discussing the resurrection.
Sure.
So like, again, like, are they all crazy people? I'm sure many atheists would say that.
Yeah.
Or lying.
Yeah, I think, you know, what you have formidable evidence for is the existence of a person named Jesus from Nazareth who was executed by the Roman/Jewish authorities in this time period, right? Like that, we're like, yeah, that definitely happened, right? We have external sources who point to that, who are not within the canon of scripture and who are not even within the canon of Christianity, right? Like the resurrection, I think it's harder to say you have formidable evidence because if you had formidable evidence, it wouldn't be a matter of faith, right? Part of it is our evidence is the faith of people that we have decided to trust, which I agree is reason to, you know, to have faith in it, right? I'm not denying the truth of the resurrection. But if you're like talking to a scientist or something like that, they're like, that's not evidence. Like, that's
correct.
You could not present this in a court of law and have a judge accept it as evidence, right? It would be hearsay, I think, really at best.
At best.
I'm probably confusing legal terms, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. And this is probably, and because I'll say this, he doesn't really get into these formidable historical evidence. And that's not the point of this article. The point is about hope.
Right.
Not about, you know, apologetics.
Right. But so his argument is because there's so much evidence, it's reasonable to have hope in this thing.
Correct.
See, I think it's because you have faith, it's reasonable to have hope in this thing.
I think that the world is getting better because Christ is in it. Is a reasonable place for Christians to land on. And I think that for me does ring true.
Yeah.
And it's very, very easy to look at your algorithm scroll on Instagram, TikTok, or Facebook, watch the news, read the paper, however you digest worldly information to see bad things. That's just the reality. But I think things are better and getting better. Mm-hmm. And like Martin Luther King Jr. would say, like, it is bending to something better. It's just sometimes hard to see the bend.
Yeah.
And especially when your algorithms or your newspapers or your TVs is giving you all the negative.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, if you think about, you know, the curvature of the earth, right? Yeah. When I stand here in this room, I can't tell that the earth is curved.
Correct.
Right. If I get up onto a mountain, I say, like, oh, it seems like things are, you know, bending away from it. If I get up into space, right, if I'm on Artemis flying away, they're like, oh, look, the earth is round. Like, it's not even curving it. Like, it's a sphere, right? So I think there is an element of what is our perspective. And the more removed we are from the current moment, the easier it is to see an arc over an extended period of time, as opposed to like honing in on like this 2-year period of history. For sure. It's hard to see that. Yeah.
And we need a compass that points us.
I don't think compass points out arcs. Maybe it does. Maybe we need the other type of compass. We need the math compass. That's,
I don't even know what that one does.
it draws arcs. That's what it does.
It draws a circle.
Which is an arc.
That's two-dimensional.
What's an arc?
Well, it's got to be. The golden arches are three-dimensional.
The golden arch?
That's McDonald's.
But you can draw them two-dimensional. Do you understand shapes? What's happening?
I'm just saying I don't see what you're saying. All right, let's get to number two. Christian hope is full.
Okay.
All right.
Christian hope is full.
Yeah.
Like okay.
All right. Every religion has offered people a hope for life after death.
Sure.
Agreed. And then secular culture, in contrast, is the first in history to tell its members that both individuals and world history will end in ultimate oblivion.
Sure.
Yeah. In the end, we go to nothing, both as civilizations and persons.
Okay.
It's kind of nihilistic.
Yeah.
But I think that this, all right, that he's going to say other religions, ultimately spiritualists, in the sense they believe matter is unimportant. In the end, all that exists will spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Secularism is matter is belief, and there is no soul or supernatural reality. But Christianity differs from both because it offers both.
Hmm. Okay. So the fullness of the resurrection is both and.
Yeah, and I think that this is interesting, that like that Jesus's redemption arc is not just for our souls,
right,
but for our bodies, for our world, for history.
Yeah.
That I do like this idea, you know, that once the we live in the fullness of the resurrection.
Yeah.
That all that has been wrong has now been put right.
Yeah.
I do like that idea. And that just doesn't include my soul, but it includes all of our relationships.
Yeah.
The world itself, creation itself is being put right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the story of Revelation, right?
We
see that play out in that final book of our scriptures, right? Where a new heaven comes down to earth, right? And God dwells among God's people, and they need no sun or moon because God is the light of the people and all the nations stream to it, right? Like, yeah, we see that play out. From a scriptural perspective.
Yeah. And like, even like in Revelation, like the world begins in a garden and ends in a city.
Mm-hmm.
And that has that same, like the technological achievements of humanity are also being like renewed, restored, redeemed through Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like we go back to a garden. No, we keep the civilizations that have been built and, you know, are also going to be put right.
Yeah.
And I think that is a beautiful imagery kind of attached to that. How that works.
Sure.
Beyond me.
Right.
But like, it's not like we just abandon all of what we know as a species at this point and go back to living in like, you know, gardens and then the trees or whatever. Like, things have advanced and they continue to advance.
Agreed.
And I think that that's a beautiful, you know, story of resurrection, is it's not static.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Christian hope is realistic.
I don't know that. I guess it depends on what we mean by realistic. I think it's realistic in the sense that I believe it's really going to happen because I believe God will make it happen. I don't think my hope is realistic in the sense of like, I can't point to the ways it's going to happen. I can't point to like when I think of like realistic, I'm like, oh, is it realistic for me to make it to this place in an hour? Yeah, because I can drive 60 minutes at 60 miles an hour and I'm going to make it to that distance, right? Like, I can figure that out. So I don't know that hope feels realistic to me, but hope feels like the very thing that we need, because it's not realistic, because what is realistic is like destruction.
Yeah. So I think what he's going to hit on these things in this article. And I think this is what matters here, is like, he's saying Christian hope is realistic because it is built in descent, destruction, and death. Like, that is part of the resurrection model. So it's not just this American ideal of the trajectory that is like every generation gets better.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is always going to be moving better in the world. It's that sometimes things get worse.
Yeah.
And sometimes things get worse for a long time, and then they start to get better. In the same way he's going to highlight in Jesus's life, things are good, things are bad. And it kind of has an up and down model. And the resurrection does not happen without a descent into death.
Okay.
You know, like the descent has to happen for the ascent into greater heights.
If that's how he's explaining it, then I can get behind hope is realistic.
So I think that idea of like, it's reflective of who we are. Like, and in your life, it's not going to be an upward trajectory from this moment on until you die peacefully in your sleep at 100 years old. Like, that's just not realistic. Mm-hmm. What's realistic is you're going to suffer. You're going to have heartache. You're going to have hardships. This is the reality for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And in the midst of those things, there's going to be real powerful beauty. And it's kind of impossible to separate in some ways, like that they're intertwined. And sometimes you don't even experience beauty without a descent or death attached to it. But, you know, I think that saying like Jesus's resurrection coming from the cross is so, I think this, I agree with this, a beautiful idea of like, even when the world is failing, Christian hope is realistic, because that's the message.
Yeah. Yeah, I can get behind that.
All right. And finally, Christian hope is effective. It says Christian hope works at the life level, the practical level. The New Testament uses the word hope in two ways. When it comes to hoping in human beings and ourselves, our hope is always relative and uncertain. If you lend this to someone, you do so in the hope the person will pay you back. We choose the best methods and why this practice to secure the outcome we want. We insist to ourselves and others that we have it sorted and under control, but we do not. We never do. This is relative. Hope. But when the object of hope is not any human agent, but of God, then hope means confidence, certainty, and full assurance. All right, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's hope in God that is assured, right?
Like, yeah.
And I think that is we've talked about like how we use the word love and things like that before too. I think we misuse hope a lot too, right?
Yeah.
Like hoping for the Astros to win the World Series is not what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah.
But hoping in the resurrection is sure, because God has always fulfilled God's promises, right? That when we look through the stories of history, when we look through the stories of scripture, there is never a point where God did not remain true to God's word.
Yeah.
And so we have full confidence. Now, we don't know what the timing is, but we have full confidence in God to bring about the promises that God has made.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he definitely highlights this. Like, Christian hope is that I stop betting my life and happiness on human agency and I rest in God. And and we have to kind of weigh those things out, right? He says, if you get diagnosed with cancer, you're going to put hope in medical achievement, in doctors, in diagnosis, and all these things. And yet it is a greater hope to place that in God, because that can't possibly fail. Doctors can do everything within their power, and you still have cancer, you know, like,
and you might still die.
And you, yeah. And even if they cure you, you will still die.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the reality.
Yeah.
But an effective hope is saying, I'm placing it in something that can't break or fail, or ultimately doesn't have the right technology behind it, you know, and that in God.
Yeah, it's interesting when we say that, because I think there are Christians who misplace their hope in an overly effective God. I don't know if that's the right way to phrase it, but like, I think there are Christians who, like, use the cancer example, right? Yeah. There are Christians whose faith is crushed because someone dies from cancer after they prayed for God to heal that person.
Sure.
Like, God did not heal this person. God is not effective. God therefore cannot be trusted because I prayed for this and God didn't make it happen, right? There are definitely Christians who have had that experience, and probably some who are having that experience right now. But that, I don't think that's real Christian hope.
Correct.
Right? I think that is a westernized understanding of, I need God to do what I want in order for God to be effective. And I think Christian hope places our hope not in what we want, but what God wants in all of these circumstances, right? And yeah. how is God faithful to what God wants? Because we trust that what God wants is what's actually best, maybe not for me, but what is best for the universe, right? And
yeah. No, I'm 100% with you. I think that this is probably where I think talking about hope in light of the resurrection is so important, because mm-hmm. it's about reaffirming, like, what am I having hope in?
Yeah.
It's not hope that my side of the political aisle wins this coming election.
Yeah.
Now, you might hope that in our world, and that's fine. Like, but like, it's hoping in something bigger.
Yeah.
And that is like a much more challenging and much more difficult thing to hope in. It's like, I don't hope that my ideals win and the opposite ideals lose. It's, I hope both of us are redeemed into something better.
Yes.
And that seems like something like so audacious, mm-hmm. you know, to even like say out loud, because yeah. like that's contrary to like maybe the human existence.
Yeah.
You know, but like that's what it means to hope in Jesus. Is not that I win and you lose, but that both of us are redeemed into something better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the great wrestlings, conflicts I have internally when we do something like with this war in Iran, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, the whole notion of war is I want my side to win.
Yeah.
And the story of Jesus really should be, I want both of us to be, as you said, right? I want both of us to be redeemed into something better. So like, how do we go into war if we want both sides to be redeemed into something better? Like,
yeah.
I think that's a place where I really personally struggle with this. And we don't have to go into that conversation today, but I think they're just really practical ways sure. in which the notion of hope being both of us are redeemed into something better, as opposed to hope being I win and you lose,
yeah,
is really radical, right? It's Jesus stopping Peter from drawing the sword in the Garden of Gethsemane, right? It's Jesus saying like, no, you don't understand what's happening. It's not about you winning. It is about me healing both of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. That's why I think like imagery of like hope in the Bible that I find really like beautiful is like the image of like the lion is going to lay down with the lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just such a beautiful image, because if you're a lion, the hope is you get to eat as many lambs as you want.
Yeah,
like that,
dude.
That's how you perceive the world. And if you're a lamb, the hope is all lions are destroyed so that I can live in peace, right? Like, or, you know, kept at bay. But the audacity of what hope in God is like these conflicting parties find connection.
Yeah.
And that is madness. To both mm-hmm. a lion and a lamb, you know, we would not throw them together in a zoo. I'm like, fingers crossed. Let's see if this works. But it's like, that's what Jesus offers is yeah. like that is a possibility.
It's like the goat in Jurassic Park.
Correct. Yes. Well, yeah, he doesn't want to eat fat. He wants to hunt.
Right. Obviously.
Jurassic Park is probably my favorite movie. So like, I see it a lot.
How often do you rewatch Jurassic Park?
I probably watch it at least once a year.
Yeah? Yeah. Are you getting your kids into it? They're still pretty young.
Is
Kat into it? Does she appreciate your Jurassic Park?
No. I mean, she doesn't dislike it.
Yeah.
And I mean, and we've probably watched most of the Jurassic Park movies, mm-hmm. and they're all bad except for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah. So there you
go. Sorry, that was a tangent.
No, that's good. Yeah. And one day, I hope that they'll make a good Jurassic Park sequel.
Sorry. So that all Jurassic Park sequels will be redeemed. Not just the ones I like, but all of them.
The one, just the original.
Yeah.
The OG. Yeah. So, all right. I don't have any other thoughts.
Yeah, I think we should spend more time talking about hope. I think that we too quickly let ourselves be convinced that hope is a waste of time. Like, you're just hoping for something that's not really here. But I mean, hope for Christianity, right? Hope should be in the realm of faith. Like, what do we have faith in if not hope? And what do we have hope in if not for faith? I think they go hand in hand. And placing our hope in what really matters, as opposed to placing our hope in things of this world or our own desires. I think that's the real challenge of faith for me, is to move our hope beyond what I think looks like a good idea and say, oh no, I'm hoping for God to prevail. Right. Like, and so like, even when I think about a political party, right, I might think like, I hope that the, you know, political party, you know, that I like wins, 'cause I think I have all the right ideas, and maybe I do have right ideas,
sure.
But what I really need is not for my political party to win. What I need is for God's wisdom to prevail.
Yeah.
Right. And, that's, a harder thing to hope for in places where we're divided.
It is, yeah.
But there we are.
Yeah, well, it's nice to live in that's in the light of the resurrection. How do we
yeah.
move forward in hope?
Yeah, that's all we can do, right?
Yep.
And I guess that's where the disciples land too, right? They, in this period of Easter, when they're, you know, learning from the resurrected Jesus, all they're doing is learning how to continue to hold on to hope, because then they're going to, Jesus is going to ascend, Pentecost is going to come, and the rest of their lives is going to be left in, we're hoping for something that has not yet come.
Yeah.
We're hoping for the return that has not yet come and still hasn't come 2,000 years later, but we continue to hold hope because it's what our faith assures us.
Yeah.
So like the disciples, we too hold on to hope.
There you go.
We're all just a bunch of Thomases. Yeah. If you had a favorite disciple, is there one you'd align with? Would you be a Thomas, a Peter, a James, a John?
Not Peter.
Judas?
There's two.
The other which one? you do seem like you'd be the other Judas, where you would just like spend your life being like, no, guys, I'm not that guy.
Just go by Jude at that point. Just change. Yeah, you gotta.
That just seems like your vibe, where you'd like accidentally get caught up in something and you have to spend the rest of the time.
I like a James.
Okay.
Sure. Brother of John.
Yeah,
One of the Zebedees. I do kind of like that they're going to Jesus and being like, yeah, but how about us? Look at these other losers.
You dig the power grab. Okay.
I dig it. I'm on board.
Yeah.
I also like, who's the one that... when the disciples like, hey, let's go meet Jesus. And he's like, ugh, Nazareth. Can anything good come from there? Yeah,
that's Andrew, if I remember correctly. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, I like that guy. You know, like, that's kind of a vibe I've got.
I can see that. All right. Well, hey, if you like this episode, you can send us which disciple you'd be most closely aligned with. Sure. You can send it to beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. You can find all our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com. And yeah, that's that.
All right, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.